Hi, this is John Hammer. Last week, the LDS Church, in a rare joint press conference with my church, Community of Christ, announced that the Joseph Smith Papers Project was releasing a high-resolution facsimile reproduction of the printer's manuscript of the Book of Mormon, which is in the vault of the Community of Christ archives. That announcement was immediately overshadowed by news that the volumes included pictures of one of Joseph Smith's seer stones from the LDS church vaults that had never before been photographed. Although the historical records of Joseph Smith's seer stones have been well known to historians for many years, Mike Quinn's book, Early Mormonism and the Magical Worldview, is the standard text on the subject, and I highly recommend it. The fact that we have this actual picture of the primary stone used in the Book of Mormon translation process has clearly made the story more real for lots and lots of people. Because the record isn't popularly known, we decided that it might be valuable to our listeners if we take a few of the dozens of accounts and testimonies of this particular stone, as told by Joseph Smith's contemporaries, both his friends and his enemies, that are published in Dan Vogel's Early Mormon Documents series, and with parts read by Glenn, Randy, Matt, Jake, and myself, we decided to put the story of Joseph the Seer and this particular seer stone into context. Where did he get the stone? How he used it as a young treasure seer? How he used it to find the plates? And testimony that this stone, and not the Urim and Thummim, were ultimately used to translate the Book of Mormon. And so, without further ado, we give you De-Romancing the Stone, a documentary reading of the stone's historical record, de-romanticized. John Hammer says, de-romancing the stone.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
I think it was the year 1830. I heard that some ancient records had been discovered that would throw some new light on the subject of religion. Being deeply interested in the matter, I concluded to go to the place and learn for myself the truth of the matter. I set out to find the Smith family farm, then residing some 3 or 4 miles south of the village of Palmyra, Wayne County, New York, and near the line of the town of Manchester. Joseph Jr., afterwards so well known, not being at home, we applied to his father for the information we wanted. This Joseph Smith Sr., we soon learned from his own lips, was a firm believer in witchcraft and other supernatural things, and had brought up his family in the same belief. He believed there was vast amount of money buried somewhere in the country, that it would someday be found, that he himself had spent both time and money searching for it with divining rods, but had not succeeded in finding any, though sure that he eventually would. Fayette Lapham, article in Historical Magazine, May 1870.
Joe claimed he could tell where money was buried with a witch hazel consisting of a forked stick of hazel. He held it one fork in each hand and claimed that the upper end was attracted to the money. My mother-in-law, Mrs. Rockwell, said the prophet Joe Smith told her there was money buried in the ground, and she spent considerable time digging in various places for it. I never knew her to find any. Joe Smith told me there was a peepstone for me, and many others if we could only find them. Joe claimed to have revelations and tell fortunes. He told mine by looking into the palm of my hand and said, among other things, that I would not live to be very old. March 1885 statement by Christopher M. Stafford, 77 years of age.
Joseph Smith Sr. gave us the following history, as near as I can repeat his words. His son, Joseph, whom he called illiterate, when about 14 years of age, happened to be where a man was looking into a dark stone and telling people therefrom where to dig for money and other things. Joseph Jr. requested the privilege of looking into the stone, which he did by putting his face into the hat where the stone was. It proved not to be the stone for him, but he could see some things, and among them, he saw the stone and where it was, in which he could see whatever he wished to see. Joseph Smith Sr. claims and believes there is a stone of this quality somewhere for everyone. The place where he saw the stone was not far from their house, and, under the pretense of digging a well, they found water and the stone at a depth of 20 or 22 feet. After this, Joseph spent 2 years looking into this stone, telling fortunes, where to find lost things, and where to dig for money and other hidden treasures. Fayette Latham, 1870.
I became acquainted with the Smith family, known as the authors of the Mormon Bible, in the year 1820. At that time, they were engaged in the money-digging business, which they followed until the later part of 1827. In the year 1822, I was engaged in digging a well. I employed Alvin and Joseph Smith to assist me, the latter of who is now known as the Mormon Prophet. After digging about 20 feet below the surface of the earth, we discovered a singularly appearing stone, which excited my curiosity. I brought it to the top of the well, and as we examined it, Joseph put it into his hat and then his face on top of his hat. It had been said by Smith that he had brought the stone from the well, but this is false. After obtaining the stone, he began to publish abroad what wonders he could discover by looking into it, and made so much disturbance among the credulous part of the community that I ordered it returned to me again. Sometime in 1825, Hiram Smith, brother of Joseph Smith, came to me and wished to borrow the same stone, alleging that they wished to accomplish some business of great importance which could not very well be done without the aid of the stone. Later on, going to Hiram Smith's and asking him for the stone, he said, "You cannot have it." I told him it belonged to me. Upon which he faced me with a malignant look and said, "I don't care who in the devil it belongs to, you shall not have it." Willard Chase, Interview 1833.
I am 67 years old. Knew the Smiths. The old man was a cooper. I was young and I don't remember much but the character. They were poorly educated, ignorant, and superstitious. We're kind of shiftless, but we do a good day's work. They used to call Joe Lobby Joe. He got a singular looking stone which was dug up from my father's mission chest as well. It belonged to my brother Willard, and he could never get it back. Joe's mother, old Mrs. Smith, got the stone from my mother. It was a dark-looking stone. It was a peculiar stone.
Abel Chase, Interview, 1881.
Joseph kept this stone, and ever after refused its restoration to the claimants. Very soon it transpired that he could see wonderful things by its aid. He raised some small contributions from the people in the vicinity to defray the expense of digging for buried money, the precise hiding place of which he had discovered by the aid of the stone in his hat. At an appointed time, being the dead hour of night, his dupes and employed laborers repaired with lanterns to the revealed locality of the treasure. And after some preparatory mystic ceremonies, the work of digging began at his signal, silence, as the condition of success. The excavating process was continued for some 2 hours without a word being spoken, when just at the moment the money box was within the seer's grasp, one of the party being tempted by the devil spoke. The enchantment was broken, and the treasure vanished. Such was Joe's explanation, and, as ridiculous as was the idea, it was apparently satisfactory to his dupes. Pomeroy Tucker, Account, 1867.
Joe Smith, who has since become the chief prophet of the Mormons, belonged to a very shiftless family near Palmyra. They lived a sort of vagrant life and were principally known as money diggers. Joe, from a boy, appeared dull and utterly destitute of genius. But his father claimed for him a sort of second sight, a power to look into the depths of the earth and discover where its precious treasures were hid. Consequently, long before the idea of a gold Bible entered their minds, in their excursions for money digging, which I believe usually occurred in the night, that they might conceal from others the knowledge of a place where they struck upon treasures, Joe used to be their guide, putting into a hat a peculiar stone he had through which he looked to decide where they should begin to dig. John A. Clark, letter, August 1840.
Joseph had a stone which was dug from the well of Mason Chase, 24 feet from the surface. In this stone he could see many things to my certain knowledge. In the first place, he told me of this stone and proposed to bind it on his eyes and run with me in the woods. A few days after this, I was at the house of his father in Manchester, 2 miles south of Palmyra Village, and was picking my teeth with a pin while sitting on the bars. The pin caught in my teeth and dropped from my fingers into shavings and straw. I jumped from the bars and looked for it. Joseph and Northrop Sweet also did the same. We couldn't find it. I then took Joseph on surprise and said to him, I said, "Take your stone." I'd never seen it and didn't know that he had it with him, but he had it in his pocket. He took it and placed it into his hat, the old white hat, and placed his face in his hat. I watched him closely to see that he did not look to one side. He reached out with his hand beyond me on the right and moved a little stick, and there I saw my pin, which he picked up and gave to me. I know he did not look out of the hat until he had picked up the pin. Martin Harris, 1859.
The family of Smiths held Joseph Jr. in high estimation on account of some supernatural power, which he was supposed to possess. This power he pretended to have received through the medium of a stone of peculiar quality. The stone was placed in the hat in such a manner as to exclude all light, except that which emanated from the stone itself. This light of the stone he pretended enabled him to see anything he wished. Accordingly, he discovered ghosts, infernal spirits, mountains of gold and silver, and many other invaluable treasures deposited in the earth. He'd often tell his neighbors of his wonderful discoveries and urge them to embark in the money-digging business. I might mention numerous schemes by which this young visionary and impostor had recourse for the purpose of obtaining a livelihood. He and indeed the whole of the family of Smiths were notorious for indolence, foolery, and falsehood. Their great object appeared to be to live without work. While they were digging for money, they were daily harassed by demands of creditors, which they were never able to pay. Joseph Capron, statement, November 1833.
Joseph had had this stone for some time. There was a company there in that neighborhood who were digging for money supposed to have been hidden by the ancients. Of this company were old Mr. Stoll, I think his name was Josiah, also old Mr. Beeman, also Samuel Lawrence, George Proper, Joseph Smith Jr., and his father and his brother Hiram Smith. They dug for money in Palmyra, Manchester, and also in Pennsylvania and other places. When Joseph found the stone, there was a company digging in Harmony, Pennsylvania, and they took Joseph to look into the stone for them. And he did so for a while, and then he told them the enchantment was so strong he couldn't see, and they gave up. There, he became acquainted with his future wife, Emma, the daughter of old Mr. Isaac Hale, where he boarded. Martin Harris, 1859.
In February 1826, the sons of Mr. Stoll, who lived with their father, were greatly incensed against Smith, as they plainly saw their father squandering his property in the fruitless search for hidden treasures, and saw that the youthful seer had unlimited control over the illusions of their sire. They caused the arrest of Smith as a vagrant, without visible means of livelihood. The trial came on in the above-mentioned month. On request of the court, Smith exhibited the stone. It was about the size of a small hen's egg, in the shape of a high insect shoe. It was composed of layers of different colors passing diagonally through it. It was very hard and smooth, perhaps by being carried in the pocket. Joseph Smith Sr. was present and sworn as a witness. He delineated his son's characteristics in his youthful days, his vision of the luminous stone in the glass, and his wonderful triumphs as a seer. The next witness was Deacon Josiah Stoll. He swore that the prisoner possessed all the power that he claimed and declared that he could see things 50 feet below the surface of the earth, as plain as the witness could see what was on the justice's table. Justice Neely soberly looked at the witness and in a solemn, dignified voice said, "Deacon Stoll, do I understand that you are swearing before God, under the solemn oath you have taken, that the prisoner can see by the aid of a stone 50 feet below the surface of the earth as plainly as you can see what is on the table?" "Do I believe it?" says Deacon Stoll. "Do I believe it? No, it is not a matter of belief. I positively know it to be true." William D. Purple, Reminiscence, 1877.
In the month of June of 1827, Joseph Smith Sr. related to me the following story, that some years ago a spirit had appeared to Joseph, his son, in a vision, and informed him that a certain place there was a record on plates of gold, that he was the person that must obtain them. After failing to obtain the plates for several years, the spirit commanded him to come again in just 1 year and bring a man with him. Joseph believed that one Samuel T. Lawrence was the man alluded to by the spirit, and went with him to a singular-looking hill in Manchester, and showed him the place where the treasure was. Lawrence asked him if he had ever discovered anything with the plates of gold. Joseph said no. Lawrence asked him to look into his stone to see if there was anything with them. Joseph looked and said there was nothing. Lawrence told him to look again to see if there was not a large pair of specs with the plates. He looked in and soon saw a pair of spectacles, the same which Joseph says he used to translate the Book of Mormon. Willard Chase, 1833.
It was by means of this stone that Joseph Smith first discovered these plates. He found them by looking in the stone in the well of Mason Chase. Martin Harris, 1859.
Joe Smith was the discoverer of a magic stone which he used to carry around in his hat. By the aid of his wonderful stone, he found gold plates on which were inscribed the writings and hieroglyphics. He translated them by means of a pair of magic spectacles, which the Lord delivered to him at the same time that the golden plates were turned up. But nobody but Joe himself ever saw the golden tablets or the far-seeing spectacles. John H. Gilbert, Interview with the Detroit Post and Tribune, 1877.
The Book of Mormon is today minus just 116 pages of the original matter, which would increase the volume fully one-fourth its present size. This unpardonable carelessness evoked the stormiest kind of chastisement from the Lord, who took from the prophet the Urim and Thummim, and otherwise expressed his condemnation. By fervent prayer, and by otherwise humbling himself, the prophet, however, again found favor, and was presented with a strange, oval-shaped chocolate stone about the size of an egg, only more flat, which, it was promised, should serve the same purpose as the missing Urim and Thummim. The latter was a pair of transparent stones set in a bow-shaped frame and very much resembled a pair of spectacles. With this stone, all of the present Book of Mormon was translated.
David Whitmer, Interview with the Omaha Herald, 1886.
Joseph observed that if it had not been for the stone, which he acknowledged belonged to me, he would not have obtained the Book of Mormon. In 1830, I again asked Hiram for the stone which he borrowed of me. He told me that I should not have it, for Joseph had made use of it in translating his Bible. Willard Chase, 1833.
Just a little magic inside of you. Ooh. Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Hi, this is Brenda from Roy, Utah, and listening to Infants on Thrones is just another one of the many bad habits that I picked up from being an ex-Mormon, such as drinking coffee, shopping on Sunday, and showing my shoulders to unsuspecting TBMs. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. Anyone for the closing prayer?